A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been watching those stock footage shots of ports with endless fields of cars, and it got him thinking. We talked before about how Ashdod and Haifa handle vehicle imports into Israel, but there's a gap in the mental model most of us have, warehousing and inventory. We picture shelves, euro boxes, maybe a forklift. But what happens when the thing you're storing is an entire car, or a truck, or even an airplane? The space requirements are absurd, the handling equipment is completely different, and the pressure to keep everything in showroom condition is brutal, because a scratch bumper writes off thousands in value. So the question is, who actually does this kind of warehousing, and how do they pull it off?
This is one of those topics where the answer is hiding in plain sight. Most people have driven past these facilities and never registered what they were looking at. The short answer is that vehicle logistics is its own entire industry. It's called finished vehicle logistics, or FVL, and the scale of it is genuinely hard to wrap your head around.
Finished vehicle logistics. I like how that sounds like a euphemism for something much more dramatic.
It really does. Sounds like the final stage of a space program. But no, it's just the industry term for moving and storing completed vehicles from factory to dealership. And the key word there is finished. These aren't parts. These aren't cargo containers full of components. These are finished products that can be damaged by a hailstorm or a seagull or a dock worker who's having a bad day.
The apex predator of port logistics.
Bird droppings are acidic and will etch clear coat if left for even a few hours. There are entire operational protocols around bird abatement at vehicle compounds.
Of course there are.
Let me give you some numbers to ground this. Roughly 80 million vehicles are produced globally each year. About a quarter of those move across an ocean at some point. That's 20 million vehicles handled by ports annually. The largest vehicle handling port in the world is probably Bremerhaven in Germany. It moves over 2 million vehicles a year. But the port of Zeebrugge in Belgium, the port of Los Angeles, Jacksonville, Baltimore, these are all massive vehicle hubs. And each one has what's called a vehicle processing center, or VPC.
And that's the warehouse equivalent?
That's the thing. A VPC isn't just a parking lot. It's a multi-stage industrial facility where vehicles are received, inspected, stored, sometimes modified, and then dispatched. The distinction between a parking lot and a VPC is the difference between a bookshelf and a library with a cataloging system.
Walk me through what happens when a ship full of cars arrives at Ashdod. The ship docks.
Alright, so picture a roll-on, roll-off vessel. They're called Ro-Ros. They look like floating multi-story parking garages. A single one of these ships can carry anywhere from 4,000 to 8,000 vehicles. The largest ones, like the Hiya Target class, can carry 8,500. When it docks, the ship opens its stern ramp, and an army of drivers, they're called stevedores in this context, but specifically vehicle handlers. They literally drive each car off the ship.
One by one.
One by one, and it's faster than it sounds. A good crew can discharge about 300 vehicles per hour per ramp, so a ship with 6,000 cars might take 20 hours to empty. But here's where it gets interesting. Each vehicle is driven directly to a designated zone in the VPC. The VPC can be 50, 100, 200 acres. That's not a parking lot, that's a small farm, but paved.
200 acres of cars. That's the kind of thing that makes you feel small.
It's organized with military precision. Every vehicle has a specific spot assigned before it even arrives, based on a digital twin of the compound. The system knows the VIN, the destination dealer, any pending customs holds, whether it needs accessory installation, whether it's been sold or is inventory. The whole thing is choreographed.
So they've modeled the entire facility, and every car in it.
And this is where the software side gets fascinating. The major players in this space, there's a company called ICL Systems, another called AutoScan, while Linnaeus Wilhelmsen has their own platform. They run what are essentially air traffic control systems for vehicles. The system tracks each car's location to within a meter or two, its status, its damage history, its customs clearance, and its outbound transport booking. If a car needs to move from the inspection bay to the accessory installation bay to the outbound staging zone, the system dispatches a driver and logs every movement.
It's a warehouse management system, but the SKUs weigh 2 tons and can be driven.
That's exactly the right way to think about it, a WMS for cars. And the handling equipment is completely different from what you'd see in a conventional warehouse. No forklifts, no pallet racking. Instead, you have specialized car transporters, multi-level vehicle carriers that can move 8 or 10 cars at once. You have automated car washes that are calibrated to not scratch paint. You have inspection tunnels with overhead lighting arrays that make every imperfection visible. Think of it as a photography studio, but for finding dents.
The lighting tunnel. I've seen photos of those. It looks like a sci-fi airlock.
It kind of is. The standard is typically 1,100 to 1,500 lux of uniform lighting. For reference, a well-lit office is about 500 lux. So you're bathing the car in 3 times normal office brightness from every angle, and trained inspectors walk around with paint depth gauges and checklists that run to hundreds of points per vehicle.
This is all before the car ever reaches a dealer.
Before it touches a showroom floor. And here's the thing, the prompt asks about keeping stock in pristine condition, and this is where the economics get brutal. A new car depreciates the moment it's manufactured, but physical damage accelerates that in ways the importer cannot recover. A hailstorm hitting a VPC with 5,000 vehicles can generate $50 million in losses in about 15 minutes.
In 15 minutes?
That's not hypothetical. In 2013, a hailstorm hit the port of Bremerhaven and damaged something like 20,000 vehicles. The insurance claim was in the hundreds of millions. Since then, the industry has invested heavily in hail protection. Some VPCs now have hail cannons, which are literally devices that fire shockwaves into storm clouds to disrupt hail formation. Others have retractable netting systems that deploy when weather alerts trigger.
I need a moment with that.
It sounds like something from a medieval siege. But they're real, and they're deployed at major vehicle compounds across Europe and increasingly in North America.
We've got hail cannons, bird abatement protocols, lighting tunnels, digital twins. This is a level of sophistication that is completely invisible to anyone who hasn't looked.
We haven't even gotten to the accessory installation side yet. This is where the VPC model gets even more interesting. A lot of vehicles arrive at port in what's called base specification, and then dealer options or regional accessories are installed at the VPC before the car ever reaches the dealer.
So the car isn't finished when it leaves the factory.
Think about things like roof racks, tow hitches, alloy wheel upgrades, body kits, decals, even some software configurations. It's more efficient to ship a standardized vehicle and then customize it close to the point of sale than to try to build every possible variant on the factory line. The VPC becomes a light manufacturing facility. You'll have dedicated bays with parts inventories, specialized tools, and technicians who do nothing but install, say, Land Rover accessory packs 8 hours a day.
The VPC is a warehouse, a quality control center, and a light factory all in one.
A customs bonded zone, which adds another layer. Most VPCs operate under customs bond, meaning the vehicles haven't technically been imported yet. They're in a legal limbo where duties haven't been paid and the cars can't be sold domestically. Only when the vehicle is released from bond and cleared through customs does it officially enter the country's commerce. For importers, this is crucial for cash flow. You don't want to pay import duty on a car that's going to sit in inventory for 90 days.
The bond zone is like a temporal holding pattern. The car is physically present, but legally not here.
That's a very corn way to put it, but yes. And the bond period varies by country. In Israel, I believe the standard is up to 12 months for vehicles in bonded storage, though most move much faster. The US is similar. The EU has its own system with the T1 transit document that allows vehicles to move between bonded locations across borders without duties being paid until the final destination.
If a car sits too long, does it become a problem?
There's a term for this, lot rot. Vehicles that sit in storage for extended periods develop a whole set of issues. Tires develop flat spots from sitting in one position, brake rotors rust, fuel goes stale. Rodents move into engine bays. That's a real problem, by the way. There's an entire sub-industry of rodent abatement for vehicle storage facilities.
Now we've got hail cannons and rodent warfare.
In humid climates, vehicles in storage can develop mold on interior surfaces if they're not periodically ventilated. So VPCs have protocols for vehicle movement. Even cars that aren't going anywhere get started and moved every few weeks. Tires get rotated to prevent flat spots. Batteries get maintained. Some facilities have dedicated staff who do nothing but drive cars in slow loops around the compound to keep everything functional.
That's a strange job. Professional car circulator.
It's a real position. And for high value or long-term storage, the protocols are even more intensive. Think about exotic cars or classic cars or even military vehicles. Those might go into climate-controlled indoor storage with humidity regulation, battery tenders connected, fuel stabilizers added, tires overinflated slightly to prevent flat spots, desiccant packs placed inside to control moisture.
At the extreme end, you're basically putting a car on life support.
That's a different segment of the industry entirely. We've been talking about the mass market, the VPCs that handle thousands of Toyotas and Hyundais. But there's a parallel universe of specialized vehicle storage for high net worth individuals. Companies like Windrush in the UK or Hegarty Storage Operations in the US. These are essentially five-star hotels for cars.
Five-star hotels for cars. The concierge is a battery tender.
They'll do things like bring the car to operating temperature once a month, exercise all the systems, even take it for a gentle drive if the owner authorizes it. Some facilities have private tracks. The storage fees can run into thousands per month for a single vehicle.
That's a different beast from the port logistics question. That's the destination, not the transit.
The port VPC is about velocity. The goal is to get vehicles in, processed, and out as fast as possible. Every day a car sits in a compound is a day of carrying cost. The importer has capital tied up, insurance costs accrue, the vehicle is exposed to risk. The industry benchmark is something like 3 to 7 days from vessel discharge to outbound transport for standard vehicles. Accessory installations add maybe 2 to 5 days.
A week, give or take, from ship to truck.
For a well-run operation. But that can blow out dramatically if there are customs issues or damage claims, or if the market is soft and the importer is deliberately slowing deliveries to manage dealer inventory levels.
Wait. They use the port as a buffer for market conditions?
All the time. The VPC is a strategic inventory buffer. If dealers aren't selling, the importer doesn't want to flood them with cars they can't move because then the dealer has to discount, which hurts the brand. So the importer will slow walk the release from the VPC. It's cheaper to store cars at port than at hundreds of individual dealerships.
The VPC doubles as a market shock absorber.
That became extremely visible during the pandemic. In 2020, when demand collapsed, ports around the world ran out of space. There were satellite images of Sheerness in the UK, of Los Angeles, of Zeebrugge, showing tens of thousands of cars parked in every available square meter. Car makers were renting disused airfields, festival grounds, anywhere they could pave or gravel.
I remember those photos. It looked like a zombie apocalypse, but for rental fleets.
That's a good description. And it exposed a vulnerability in the system. VPCs are designed for throughput, not for static storage. When throughput stops, they fill up fast. The industry has been rethinking buffer capacity ever since.
Let's get into the players. Who actually runs these operations? Is it the shipping lines?
It's a mix, and the structure varies by region. The shipping lines are major players. Companies like Wallenius Wilhelmsen, which is Norwegian, or NYK Line and K Line from Japan, or Hyundai Autoliners. These companies don't just move cars across the ocean. They own and operate VPCs at major ports around the world. Wallenius Wilhelmsen, for example, operates something like 60 vehicle processing centers globally.
So the shipping company is also the warehouse operator, the customs broker, and the accessory installer.
They're vertically integrated logistics providers. They'll pick up the car from the factory in, say, Ulsan, Korea, put it on their ship, unloaded in Port Hueneme, California, process it through their VPC, install port-installed options, and then arrange truck or rail transport to the dealer. One company, one contract, end-to-end.
The car makers are okay with outsourcing all of that?
They prefer it. Car makers want to make cars. They don't want to run port operations. That's a completely different competency. Toyota doesn't want to manage hail cannon maintenance or deal with longshore labor negotiations. So they contract with what are called third-party logistics providers, 3PLs, who specialize in this.
The real power in vehicle logistics sits with these shipping and logistics companies that most people have never heard of.
Wallenius Wilhelmsen is a $10 billion company. Hiegg Autoliners is publicly traded. These are massive enterprises, and they're essentially invisible to consumers. And there's another layer too, the inland vehicle logistics providers. Companies like United Road in the US or ECM in Europe, which specialize in vehicle transport by truck. They're the ones who actually move the cars from VPC to dealer.
All of this is coordinated by the software layer you mentioned earlier.
The software is the nervous system of the whole operation. And it's more complex than you might think because a vehicle changes status many times. It arrives, it's inspected, damage is logged, photos are taken and attached to the VIN record, customs clearance is tracked, any repair work orders are generated, accessory installations are scheduled, quality checks are performed after installation, outbound transport is booked, and the vehicle is released. Each status change has to be tracked for the importer, the dealer, and often the end customer who's waiting for their car.
The end customer can see where their car is?
A lot of manufacturers now offer order tracking that shows the customer exactly where their vehicle is in the pipeline. BMW has been doing this for years. Tesla does it. The data comes from these VPC systems. When you see your vehicle is at the port awaiting transport, that's the VPC management system feeding data to the consumer-facing portal.
The transparency that Amazon trained us to expect from e-commerce is now standard for cars.
That puts enormous pressure on the VPC operators. Every delay is visible. Every extra day in the compound generates customer inquiries to dealers who then pressure the importer who then pressures the logistics provider. The whole chain is transparent now.
Let me pull us back to something you mentioned earlier. Damage. You said a scratch can cost thousands. How is damage actually handled in these facilities?
This is one of the most operationally intense parts of the whole business. Every vehicle is inspected at multiple points. The first inspection happens as the vehicle is driven off the ship. The stevedore who drives it off will note any visible damage. Then there's a formal inbound inspection in the lighting tunnel. Any damage found is logged, photographed, and categorized as either transport damage, which happened during shipping, or pre-existing from the factory.
Who's liable for transport damage?
It depends on the contract terms, but typically the shipping line carries insurance for damage during ocean transit. The VPC operator carries insurance for damage that occurs in the compound, and there's a whole claims process. But here's the operational challenge. If a vehicle arrives with a scratched bumper, the VPC can't just send it to a body shop and hold up the whole pipeline. So most VPCs have in-house repair facilities.
They've got body shops on site.
Full body shops. Paint booths, dent repair technicians, parts inventories for common damage items like bumpers and mirrors. Minor damage can be repaired in a day or two, and the vehicle continues through the pipeline. Major damage might get escalated to a more specialized facility, but the goal is to handle as much as possible within the VPC.
That's a level of vertical integration I hadn't considered. They're not just storing and moving cars. They're fixing them, accessorizing them, cleaning them, photographing them.
In some cases, they're even doing more significant modifications. Some VPCs handle what's called knockdown kit assembly. This is where vehicles are partially disassembled for shipping efficiency and then reassembled at the destination port. This is common for certain markets with high import duties on complete vehicles. If you ship it as parts and assemble it locally, the duty treatment might be different.
The VPC can be a small factory.
In some markets, absolutely. There are VPCs in Southeast Asia and Africa that are essentially assembly plants. They receive vehicles in crates, sometimes multiple vehicles per crate, and build them on site. It's a different model from the European and North American VPCs, but it exists.
What about the prompt's mention of airplanes? That seems like an entirely different category.
It is, but the principles are related. Aircraft storage is a specialized industry that has some interesting overlaps with vehicle logistics. When an aircraft is taken out of service, either temporarily, like during the pandemic, or permanently, it goes to what's called a boneyard or an aircraft storage facility. The most famous ones are in desert locations, Mojave in California, Alice Springs in Australia, Teruel in Spain.
The desert locations? That's about corrosion prevention?
Low humidity is the key factor. Aircraft are mostly aluminum, and aluminum corrodes, so you want the driest air possible. The Mojave Desert gets something like 5 inches of rain a year. That's ideal for long-term aircraft storage. The facilities there have protocols for preserving aircraft. Engines are sealed, fluids are drained or treated, windows are covered, openings are plugged against wildlife and dust. Landing gear gets greased, tires get rotated.
It's the same principle as the car storage, but on a completely different scale.
The economics are different too. A stored aircraft isn't depreciating the way a car does. Aircraft have much longer service lives, and many of them are stored with the intention of eventually returning to service. Others are being parted out, stripped for components that still have value, so the storage facility might also be a disassembly operation, cataloging and selling parts.
The Boneyard has a warehouse for parts.
And during the pandemic, this industry exploded. Thousands of aircraft were suddenly grounded with nowhere to park. Airports ran out of ramp space. Aircraft storage facilities were completely full. Planes were parked on closed runways, on taxiways, on any available hard surface. It was the aviation equivalent of those satellite images of cars at ports.
Did that lead to any innovations in storage techniques?
It led to a lot of refinement of preservation protocols. The industry learned a lot about what happens when you park a plane for 18 months instead of 6. Things like fuel system preservation, hydraulic system cycling, engine preservation. There were some real challenges bringing those aircraft back into service. Minor issues that had been dormant became active problems when systems were pressurized again.
The storage itself creates a maintenance burden that has to be managed.
That's true for vehicles too. The longer a car sits, the more it costs to keep it saleable. At some point, the carrying cost exceeds the value of holding the inventory, and you're better off selling at a discount. This is the fundamental tension of vehicle logistics. The warehouse isn't neutral. It's a hostile environment for complex machinery, and you're constantly fighting entropy.
Entropy with a budget line item.
It's a significant line item. For a large VPC, the operating costs, labor, utilities, insurance, maintenance of the facility itself, can run into tens of millions per year. The margin on vehicle handling is thin, which is why scale matters so much. You need volume to amortize all that infrastructure.
The barrier to entry is massive. You can't just pave a field and call it a VPC.
You can, and some operators did exactly that during the pandemic overflow, but it's not a sustainable business. A proper VPC requires investment in paving that can handle heavy vehicle traffic without degrading, drainage systems that prevent flooding, security systems including perimeter fencing and camera coverage, and sometimes even radar. Lighting for night operations, fueling infrastructure for the vehicles being moved, wash facilities, inspection tunnels, repair bays, parts warehouses, office space for customs and logistics staff, IT infrastructure. It's a significant capital project.
All of this sits on prime port adjacent real estate, which isn't cheap.
The land itself is a major cost. Port adjacent industrial land in a place like Los Angeles or Rotterdam is extraordinarily expensive. So there's constant pressure to maximize throughput per acre. That's why the digital twin and the choreography are so important. You can't afford to have vehicles sitting in the wrong place, blocking movement, creating congestion. Every square meter has to earn its keep.
Which brings us back to the software. The physical infrastructure is impressive, but the real differentiator is the orchestration layer.
The orchestration layer is getting smarter. The industry is starting to adopt machine learning for demand forecasting, for damage detection. There are systems now that use computer vision to scan vehicles and flag anomalies automatically, without a human inspector having to walk around every car. Autonomous vehicle movement within compounds is being trialed. The vision is a VPC where cars drive themselves from the ship to the inspection bay to the storage zone to the outbound transporter, all coordinated by a central system.
The self-parking car is a logistics unit.
It makes perfect sense in a controlled environment. The VPC is a closed facility with known routes, no pedestrians, no public traffic. It's actually a much easier autonomy problem than public roads. I've seen some pilot projects from companies like Fernride in Germany that are doing exactly this. Autonomous yard trucks moving vehicles around logistics compounds.
The VPC of the future is a giant robot parking lot.
With hail cannons.
With hail cannons, yes. We can't forget the hail cannons.
The rodent abatement program.
It's strange how a question about warehousing cars leads you to a place where you're discussing autonomous vehicle orchestration, weather modification, and pest control as routine operational concerns.
That's what I love about logistics. It's never just one thing. It's always the intersection of a dozen different disciplines, all layered on top of each other, all invisible to the end consumer who just picks up their car at the dealer and never thinks about any of it.
The invisible industry. That's almost the tagline for this whole show at this point.
Vehicle logistics is one of the most invisible parts of it. Everyone sees the car carrier trucks on the highway. But the compounds, the VPCs, the digital orchestration, most people have no idea that any of it exists.
To bring it back to the prompt's specific question about Israel, Ashdod, and Haifa, do those ports have VPCs on this model?
They do, though at a smaller scale than the mega hubs in Europe. Ashdod has a dedicated vehicle terminal operated by the Port Authority. Haifa's vehicle operations have historically been significant as well, though Ashdod handles the majority of vehicle imports into Israel. The facilities include inspection areas, storage compounds, and some accessory installation capability. But Israel's market is relatively small, about 300,000 new vehicles per year, so the operations are more compact.
The same companies are involved.
The global shipping lines serve Israel, while Lennius Wilhelmsen, Hureg, and YK all call at Israeli ports. The local logistics providers handle the inland transport and dealer delivery. The model is the same, just scaled to the market.
Those satellite images of ports with thousands of cars, that's Ashdod too, just a smaller batch of cars.
The same choreography, the same inspection protocols, the same customs bond arrangements. The principles scale up and down. What changes is the volume and the size of the compound, not the fundamental operating model.
One thing I'm curious about, you mentioned accessory installation. What kind of accessories are we talking about in practice? What gets installed at a VPC rather than at the factory or the dealer?
It varies by market and by brand, but typical port installed options include things like floor mats, roof racks, tow hitches, splash guards, wheel locks, body side moldings, door edge guards, rear spoilers, running boards on SUVs, bed liners on trucks. Some brands do more significant installations. Performance exhausts, suspension upgrades, even supercharger kits in some cases for brands like TRD or AMG.
If you buy a car with a dealer-installed tow hitch, it might actually have been installed at the port before the dealer ever saw the vehicle.
In many cases, the dealer doesn't even know. The vehicle arrives with the accessories already on, and the dealer just delivers it. The accessory cost is baked into the vehicle invoice. The dealer never touches it.
Which must be appealing to dealers. Less labor, less liability, less inventory of parts.
The VPC technicians do nothing but install these specific accessories all day. They're faster, they make fewer mistakes, the quality is more uniform. A dealer tech might install a tow hitch once a month. A VPC tech might install 50 a day. The expertise differential is enormous.
The assembly line logic applied to post-production customization.
It's a trend that's growing. As vehicles become more software-defined, some of the installation is becoming digital. Features are activated via software at the VPC rather than physically installed. So, the VPC is also becoming a software configuration center.
The car arrives physically complete, but digitally incomplete, and the VPC finishes it.
That's where the industry is heading, and it has interesting implications for inventory management. If a vehicle's features can be activated in software, the importer can hold a pool of physically identical vehicles and configure them to order much later in the process. That reduces the number of variants they need to stock and improves matching of vehicles to customer orders.
The software-defined vehicle is an inventory optimization strategy.
It collapses the long tail of options that has historically made vehicle inventory management so difficult. You don't need to forecast whether you'll sell 50 blue ones with the cold weather package or 30 white ones without it. You just stock 50 base vehicles and activate the cold weather package on the ones that need it.
This connects to something I've been thinking about. The whole model of car distribution is built on the assumption that you're pushing physical inventory through a pipeline and matching it to demand as best you can. But as the product becomes more software configurable, the pipeline becomes more flexible. The physical car is just a platform.
The VPC becomes the point where the generic platform becomes a specific product for a specific customer. It's a fascinating shift. The port compound, which used to be just a parking lot with a fence, becomes a critical node in the customization and configuration chain.
The parking lot as a factory. We've come full circle.
We really have. And that's the thing about logistics. It's never static. The industry is constantly evolving, and the evolution is almost always toward more value-added activity at the logistics node. The warehouse isn't just a warehouse anymore. It's a manufacturing facility, a quality center, a software hub, and a strategic buffer all at once.
Which is exactly the kind of complexity that makes this topic worth digging into. The surface is just cars in a lot. The reality is a multi-layered industrial operation that most people will never see or think about.
That's the show, really. Making the invisible visible.
Now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
During the interwar period, researchers in Honduras studying mantis shrimp vision discovered that the animal's acoustic sensitivity extends into the infrasonic range, allowing it to detect the hydrodynamic pressure waves of approaching predators through its carapace, effectively hearing with its shell at frequencies as low as 5 hertz.
Mantis shrimp hear through their armor.
At 5 hertz. That's not hearing, that's sensing the baseline of doom. Here's the one thing I'd leave listeners with. Next time you drive past a port and see those endless rows of cars, you're not looking at a parking lot. You're looking at a highly choreographed industrial facility where every vehicle is tracked, inspected, repaired, customized, and dispatched with a level of precision that rivals any factory floor. And none of it existed 100 years ago. The entire discipline of finished vehicle logistics was invented in response to the global auto industry, and it's still evolving.
The invisible industry, hiding in plain sight behind a fence.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps. Find us at My Weird Prompts.
I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. See you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.